starting a little late, but we appreciate your patience with this slight delay. With that, I would like to call the meeting to order, this meeting of the City Council of University City, Missouri at 6:43. Ms. Pump, would you please call the roll?
Mr. President?
Here.
Ms. Carter?
Present.
Mr. Craig?
Here.
Mr. Crowe?
Here.
Mr. Glicker? Mr. Sharp?
But we did have you down for Library Board. Okay, so is there a motion to approve the agenda as amended? Mr. Glicker moves. Is there a second? Ms. Carr seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the amended agenda, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. There is one proclamation concerning independence for independent businesses that help preserve the uniqueness of our community. I have signed this proclamation, and if you are interested in receiving a copy of this proclamation, please contact the city clerk. We now move on to the approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of the study session on June 10th, 2013? Mr. Sharp moves. Is there a second? Mr. Glickert seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of the City Council regular session of June 10th, 2013? Mr. Sharp moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Price seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We now move on to appointments. Mr. Price, you have an appointment to the Library Board?
Yeah, I'd like to move that Dorothy Davis be appointed to Library Board.
Mr. Price moves. Mr. Sharp seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Donna Marin was sworn into the Historic Preservation Commission in the City Clerk's office. We now move on to the citizen participation segment of this agenda. This is the time where citizens who are speaking on a non-agenda item will be called to the podium. I would ask that you identify yourself and give your name and address before when you start speaking. Please turn the microphone on when you come to the podium and off when you leave, and please limit your comments to 5 minutes. Our first speaker is Dylan Allen.
My name is Dylan Allen, and I live at 7114 Stanford Avenue. My idea is to put a skate park in University City, and I think some of the upsides of having a skate park would be it would be a good community for skateboarders, and there's already a skateboarding community in the Loop because there's a skate shop called Sweat Life, and it's really enhanced the skate park community or skateboarder community. Another upside would be skateboarders would get off the streets and they would stop damaging property and like shredding up the rails and stairs and curbs and such. Another upside would be a skate park would be a lot safer for the skateboarders because they wouldn't have to deal with like running into cars or falling off of stuff. And it would also make U-City a more desirable destination for skateboarders who have families that are vacationing. And I think that if a skateboarder would want to go to a place, it would probably have a skate park in it. And my idea for the location would be in Keeman Park because it has lots of space in it. And that's it.
Thank you very much. The next speaker is Jackie Weber.
Thank you.
Good evening, City Council. My name is Jackie Womack. I live at 7300 Ahern. I have had a strange opportunity to sit on two commissions plus. I think that's, I give thanks that I was able to sit on these commissions. Coming in pretty green, I listened, best I could listen to, for someone with short of hearing. I've learned a lot about government. I've learned a lot about you guys. I've learned a little bit from everybody sitting right here, whether you realize that or not. I have. I continue to listen. I sit on the Human Relations Commission, and we need some help. We have gotten off base a little bit. I guess this point, we don't need the names. I think we need the more of a camaraderie, and we need to get on the same page, because we are not on the same page. We have in meetings that is only for a few. What I mean a few, there's only two. The whole commission is not involved at all. We have special meetings that we don't vote on. The whole commission has not been able to vote on. So consequently, nobody knows what's going on. We need to clean that up. Mr. Kraft, I understand you and Mrs. Carr have such a committee listening and making recommendations. I was hoping that both you two guys could come in and listen and make recommendations. I have here a good example of what I'm talking about. We have an issue now where we're addressing schnooks. Nobody knows about it. Nobody knows about these special meetings that we're having. I complained about that last Thursday at the meeting. I asked why. I held the sheet up. Why has I not been invited? Why wasn't I contacted? I'm the secretary of the commission. I should be the first one that they contact. I wasn't. I would have had an opportunity to talk to the Schnitz people, and they let me know that it's another meeting, another secret meeting in July. They've stated that I'm aware of it. I'm not aware of it. So I said, well, we need to stop and we need to correct this immediately. I would like to see this city council get involved in that. It's a very important commission. I go back a few years, and I don't want to bore you guys with all of this, but this issue is the most recent issue. That is two individuals that running the commission that's not connecting with everybody else sitting there, particularly on a vote. We should be able to sit there and vote on everything that we do. So far, we are not doing it. And I'm hoping that you guys can help us with it. Were you going to can I get that back from you, Joyce? Okay, man. Mr. Kraft, I've missed you and the mayor when you guys came. I've missed you. Regrettable. Because I had some things to say. I can't say it all now because there's a time limit on it. But I'm hoping down the road, here real soon, I'll get a chance to talk to you guys again, or get a chance for everybody back here that's concerned about the human relations, come to the meeting. You have issues and things that you want to express, come to the meeting.
Mr. Womack, you have 20 seconds.
I got time up.
Just about 20 seconds more.
Okay. I want to say more. I will probably come back again at other meetings to go back, but right now, this is the main issue right now. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have only one other request to speak from Ms. Babette Patton. Is that on the flood agenda item? Okay, thank you very much. We now move on to, we have no public hearing tonight, no consent agenda, so we now move on to the city manager's report. Mr. Walker, I will ask that you give your report, and Ms. Patton, we will give you an opportunity to speak.
Madam Mayor, members of council, the first item under the city manager's report will just be a very brief update. I wanted to advise council and members of the public as to what the city has been doing with respect to the flash flood, which occurred on Monday, June 17th. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I wanted to advise council and the members of the public of what actions the city has taken as a result of the flash flood that occurred on Monday, June the 17th. Fortunately, I can indicate that as a result of the heavy rainfall that we had yesterday, we haven't had any new problems reported to us. However, as a result of the flash flood that occurred on Monday, June 17th, staff from various departments were involved. We inspected in excess of 119 dwelling units. Currently, 75 to 80 of those are still uninhabitable. As I understand it, people are still working so that they are able to get back into their homes. We immediately established a disaster hotline. We distributed to flyers to all of the affected properties, as well as those properties that were affected by the 2008 flood that several of us were here at that time, and we had a good handle in terms of those properties that were prone to flooding. We established a disaster hotline immediately. We are working with those who were affected by that flood on permit fees. As we did in 2008, we'll be waiving all permit fees for those who were affected by the flood as they have to undertake certain repairs to their homes. We've also adjusted the time frame associated with the corrective repair work for flood damaged properties. We've extended that time from 60 days to 120 days, basically doubling the time. We've put the disaster hotline information on the city's website, on social media, and on flyers in all of the flood affected properties in the city that we are aware of. Council has been provided with all of this information, and did a press release as well. But I thought it important that any new information was provided. We will put together another report to council as we get further along in the process in terms of ensuring that these processes, that people are able to move back into their homes.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. Ms. Babette Patton.
Good afternoon. My name is Babette Patton. I'm at 7901 Glenside Place. Most of you know me because of the flooding in 08, and it happened to me again. I am one of the people that is not in their home. My home does not have a basement, so when water comes in my house, it is completely in every room of my house. I'm not sure when you all made the plans or with the so-called improvements along 82nd, what the Corps of Engineers thought would happen to the houses below that. It just doesn't make any sense to me at all. I think all of us are asking for, and I know Paulette, you were there, Lehman, I saw you there, Shelley, you were there. I certainly appreciate you being there, but that does nothing about getting us somewhere where we are safe. That was a foot and a half of water in my yard. I wasn't home. My husband was home. If he had tripped, fallen, he would have just washed down the river. You know, are you going to wait until someone dies again before you do something about this? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Walker, we now move to the second item on your agenda.
The second item on the agenda will be staff recognition. I'm going to ask the fire chief, Mr. Adam Long, to come forward.
Good evening. Thank you for your time. Just to be brief, we'd just like to recognize one of our citizens and one of our fire crews for some of their life-saving awards. First, we have Mr. Ladarius Tisdale. On May 7, 2013, an emergency was placed for an unresponsive person at McDonald's restaurant. Prior to the emergency crew's arrival, Ladarius Tisdale, an employee of McDonald's, was providing excellent care for the patient. He was supporting the patient and kept his airway open and assisted us by maintaining an open airway on the patient. He also provided us with valuable information for a successful outcome. It's an honor to present Ladarius with this outstanding Citizen Lifesaving Award. The second will be for a couple of our fire crews. On the morning of March 8, 2013, the paramedic crew of Sean Van Winkle, Brian Wiggers, along with the ladder truck crew of Joel Myers, Christopher Guitar, and Steve Brockman responded from Engine House 1 for an unresponsive person. Upon arrival, they discovered an unconscious 64-year-old male patient who was taking his last breath and had no pulse. CPR was immediately started by Brian Wiggers and Sean Van Winkle connected the heart monitor to the patient. After 8 minutes of emergency life-saving treatment, which included CPR, defibrillation, and administering intravenous life-saving drugs, the patient started breathing on his own and had normal vital signs. Thanks to the quick action and professionalism of these individuals, the patient was able to walk out of the hospital a few days later. Joel Myers. Paramedic firefighter Sean Van Winkle. Paramedic firefighter Brian Wiggers. Steve Brockman and Chris Guitar could not be here. So I want to thank you so much.
Mr. Walker.
Next item under the City Manager's report is the Kingsland Avenue Sidewalk Replacement Project. Staff is recommending City Council approve the award for the Kingsbury Avenue Sidewalk Replacement Project to SBC Contracting Incorporated in the amount of $41,925.
Is there a motion? Mr. Sharp moves. Is there a second? Mr. Clifford seconds. Mr. Crow, did you have a question? Okay. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the ayes have it. Thank you very much, Mr. Walker.
Next item under the City Manager's report is the sanitary sewer lateral repairs. Staff is recommending that the BITCO LLC for its lowest bid of $130,948 be awarded the contract.
Is there a motion to approve?
Move approval.
Mr. Price moves. Is there a second? Mr. Glickert seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the ayes have it. Thank you very much, Mr. Walker.
Next item under the City Manager's report is the authorization for the City Manager to enter into a contract with Armstrong Teasdale for legal services for possible formation of the Del Mar Loop Community Improvement District. Staff is recommending approval.
Is there a motion to approve? Mr. Sharp, is there a second? No second? Okay, well, there's no second, so I guess... Oh, I'm sorry, who seconded? Mr. Kraft seconds. Is there any discussion? Mr.
Price and Ms. Carr.
Yeah, question. How does this relate to or affect the Loop Business District?
Mr. Gackey, I'm going to ask you to speak to that.
With respect to Council Member Price's question, and to provide a little bit of background, the Loop Special Business District requested $40,000 in Economic Development Retail Sales Tax funds for legal services to explore the possibility of disbanding the Special Business District and forming a Community Improvement District that would be identical to a Community Improvement District in the City of St. Louis. Currently, both municipalities have special business districts that are limited in terms of their funding source and the use of the funds, and also the general nature, the purpose, etc. So both business districts are looking for kind of a cohesive approach to the use of funds as well as planning efforts. So the Loop Special Business District is aware of and actually recommended the formation or the exploration of a separate entity.
Ms. Carr?
Thank you. I have questions of Ms. Raganti. May I? I'd like to know what the benefits are to the city. It's clear what the benefits are to the property holders in the Loop, not necessarily the businesses, but what's the benefit to the city?
Of a community improvement district? Well, in essence, we would benefit from any kind of improvements that were made in the Loop Special Business District. There are a number of different ways and different funding sources for the use of the Community Improvement District that aren't currently permitted by the Special Business District legislation. For example, property acquisition, increased security measures, beautification efforts, etc. So the city could, some of the efforts that are currently being funded through the Economic Development Retail Sales Tax to benefit the Loop Special Business District could be supplanted by this other source of funding. In essence, there would be numerous benefits to the community, to the city, and also, depending on the type of community improvement district that is formed, the city could have a place on the board of the CID, whereas right now, we do not have a place on the board of a special business district.
To continue my question, I understand that we don't have a place on the board, but they are part of the city, in a sense. They would be more independent as a CID, is that correct?
That's correct.
And so we would be essentially be forming a subdivision within our subdivision, or is it independent of our subdivision?
It would be independent of our subdivision, but again, it depends on, there are a couple of different types of CIDs that could be formed. One of the things that the attorneys would do would be to look at the various options available to the city, to the special business district, and make a recommendation.
Okay, so I'm not very concerned about the city of St. Louis right now. I'm much more concerned about our city and how this affects our city. So if this is more independent and they can in fact tax more, because that's kind of what we're getting at, I'm wondering, can they issue TIFs, or will we be issuing TIFs, or how will that go?
The CID cannot issue a TIF.
Okay, so they would be dependent upon us. They would be coming to us if they wanted to issue a TIF.
That's correct.
Okay. So again, I'm not clear. Now, one of the major property owners in that district, both in our city and in the city of St. Louis, is Washington University. And I have heard that Washington University is interested in making a contribution of $400,000 per CID. While to our city, we get no pilot. We do get $90,000 that covers the salary basically of one police officer. With with other compensation, and I'm a little bit puzzled why they're so eager to give money to a subdivision. Is it a subdivision that they are basically going to run? And I'm a little bit concerned about, in a sense, giving away our major commercial district, giving it independence, it's, in a sense.
I understand that, and though I'm not an expert on the formation of this, I don't know if Ms. Forster would like to answer any legal questions, but before a SIT can be formed, a petition of the property owners would have to be signed and then submitted to the city. There would be a petition to the city to form a SIT. So the district cannot form, such as, for example, the one that is building, the funding the construction of the traffic lights for the Walgreens project at Del Mar and Delrex was through a SIT. We had to pay a petition to the city in order to form a SIT. So the same process would come before you all.
That's it for a traffic light. This is for a whole commercial district, a major commercial district.
That's correct.
Okay, and why are we looking at Armstrong Teasdale instead of some other firm less expensive? I read in here that they have the what someone deems to be the commensurate qualifications to do this, but I'm sure they're not the only.
We issued an RFP. The city of University City in tandem with the Speaker Calvert Neighborhood Council issued joint RFPs. We received four responses. We interviewed qualified firms, and we had a representative from the Loop Special Business District and the East Loop Special Business District, and we all determined that Armstrong Teasdale was the best qualified firm. While we received many qualified applications or responses, many of them specifically and only addressed our scope, whereas Armstrong Teasdale went a little bit beyond that and said, are you sure you want to form a SID? Let's look at other opportunities and come up with the best recommendation for, in order to achieve the goals of these two special business districts as well as the city.
Okay, and I have one final question, and it may be for our city attorney. If we go ahead with this, are we starting down a path from which we cannot pull back?
I'll respond, no. The Community Improvement District, there would have to be a petition brought before the City Council before one can be formed later.
Okay, I have no doubt that the property owners would go along with this. My concern is how the loss of our major commercial district might impact the rest of the city in terms of them being more independent than other areas. So, thank you very much.
Mr. Crow?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. To the city manager,
I guess a couple of questions. First is, unless I'm missing it, though, at Delcrest and Del Mar, no one asked us to pay the legal fees for the lawyers to get this thing started.
That's correct.
And so I can understand why the landowners in the Loop would like to have this, and I can understand why they'd like us to pay for the legal fees. But I'm still trying to figure out what the benefit is to us as a city and to our citizens. And I'm at least getting a little bit just cynical that if Washington wants to put in $400,000 to a SID and they're the landowner and they'll have one of the largest votes in this deal, I just think we have to ask ourselves the question. I still am coming back, why are we paying for this?
The $40,000 was approved by the Economic Development Retail Sales Tax last year, as well as City Council last year.
So you're saying that because it's set aside, we still have to approve this contract, though?
I'm saying that the budget was approved last year.
Okay. I guess, to me, I've got a there seems to be something a little bit wrong with this picture. It's causing me concern. And by the way, Ms. Rigondo, I could easily have been one of the folks who voted for it last year, just clearly could. But to me, I think that I've got a number of questions about the benefits to the city versus the benefit to the landowners.
One of the work products that we've asked for the attorney to prepare is an educational component of what the benefits are of a community improvement district, some significant outreach and public involvement, and part of that could be what is the benefit to the community, to the city, of forming a SID. Mr. Glicker?
Mr. Gatti, do you know what Skinker Developer Community Council is appropriating to this opportunity with Armstrong Teasdale? Obviously, ours is $40,000 approved through the board and then the council, but do you know what their share is?
Their share is an equal amount of $40,000.
Okay, and we're getting equal opportunity here?
That's correct. Mr. Kraft?
So we're voting to have an attorney tell us about it. We can still vote it down if we don't like it. That's correct?
That's correct.
I am a little concerned that we're paying for an attorney who represents somebody else, kind of. I mean, I don't mind paying my attorney, but I don't know if I want to pay the attorney for the person that I'm negotiating with. That's my only concern here. I mean, the Loop Special Business District does have its own funds, don't they?
They do. They collect somewhere around $70,000 a year. And again, they did request funds from the Economic Development Retail Sales Tax in the city for the legal services. The attorney will be engaged by the city and also by Skinker DeBolivar Neighborhood Council and will report to us in terms of the overall structure.
So the attorney that is being hired is really our attorney, sort of?
That's correct.
Well, the ambivalence I hear is that, gee, we're picking up the whole tab here. Think we maybe could take our little begging cup and go to the LSBD and see if they might want to split it with us? I mean, at the worst they could say, of course, is no.
Mr. Walker?
Madam Mayor, members of the council, upon hearing some of the questions and concerns being raised, I think administratively we will withdraw this item and have further discussion with the staff on
it. Point of information, that needs an amendment or a motion, doesn't it, to postpone this? And that's what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. That would be all right with the council. A motion before us is to postpone this.
Second.
We have a motion to postpone discussion of original item number 4 of the city manager's agenda until staff has further time to study it and bring it back to this council. Mr. Lickert moves, Mr. Kraft seconds. Any further discussion? Mr. Carr. Crow.
Madam Mayor, I guess that Mr. Kraft brings up to me an excellent point. I think one of the questions we may have to look at is even going to the Loop Special Business District. To me, I think the question is going to be, does this benefit the Loop Special Business District owners of the businesses, or does it benefit the landowners? And I think that asking the Loop Special Business District business owners this question, I think we've got to sort of get to the root of this, because I think this may be one of those times where the landowners and the business owners are not necessarily going to be on the same page, and that's all I would ask is that go forward in those conversations.
Thank you, Mr. Crow. Mr. Price?
Yeah, the clarification of the motion, is the motion to bring back information for us to review in advance versus sitting here today trying to decipher what they bring back?
The motion is to delay, postpone consideration of this item until staff has had time to review the item and make recommendation to council. If you are asking Mr. Walker to provide you with their recommendations prior to its appearance in the packet 10 days before the next meeting or whenever, we can ask him to do that. This item was in the packet, but if you'd like more advance notice, I think we can ask Mr. Walker to do that.
Well, yeah, because, and I'll just end with this. I need to know, when you, it's kind of like, to me, MSD, they're an independent operation that everybody doesn't know who controls it, can't get them to do anything. So when you surrender or give away your business district, it's the same type of deal. You don't control it, somebody else controls it. It's a nebulous situation. So I just need to know, what is the true benefit to you city, period? Not crossing over Skinker, you city, coming back west.
Mr. Sharp?
Mr. Walker, can we also have our attorney to look at this and give us some type of report or some type of information as to the value or if it's in our best interest to go forward with this?
Yes, Councilmember Sharp.
Thank you all. And before I move forward, I would just like to remind members of council, if you do have questions about any of the agenda items, please feel free to call Mr. Walker or whomever put the agenda item on the agenda, and they will try to get information to you prior to the night when we're being asked to vote. Mr. Kraft.
It is point of order. I think we have to vote to postpone this.
Yes. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, the ayes have it. Thank you very much, Mr. Walker.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, next item on the city manager's agenda is the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant application. It is for $18,875 for a license plate reader. There are no matching funds required. It does require council approval, however, to apply for the grant. Staff is recommending approval.
Mr. Flicker moves approval. Mr. Sharp seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much, Mr. Walker.
Last item under the city manager's report is an information report. It's a budget update that includes information regarding projected revenues and expenditures as well as the reserves information item.
Does any member of council, Ms. Carr or Mr. Booker?
I have a couple of questions for Mr. Walker, if I might. So what we're reviewing here is the projected, but not yet the actuals. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, and so what is the difference between the projected and the amended so that I have a better understanding for that?
The amended budget number closer to actuals, but I'm going to ask Ms. our finance director to come up and address that more specifically.
Good evening, council members and the mayor. The amended budget is budget amount. The projected is actual amount. So, when we first adopt the budget and for fiscal year 2013, we have two amendments that we submitted to City Council for approval. And that would change our adopted budget to be amended. As far as projected, it projects the actual expenditures and revenue.
But these are not yet the actuals, or are they?
Not yet, because our year end is not ended until June 30th.
Okay. I have a couple of other questions. It says here that for FY 2013, we have a revenues exceeding expenditures of $75,000. But as I look at those items that were authorized by council but not yet spent, that's in a total of amount of $330,000, and that includes $80,000 for the comprehensive plan, $15,000 for the Civic Plaza study, $160,000 for home rehabilitation grant, $50,000 for the pension and pay study, and $25,000 for the senior youth task force and transportation study, totaling $330,000. So, how will we handle that $330,000 we're projected to spend but haven't yet spent?
Correct. And I don't believe that we're going to spend for this fiscal year 2013.
Oh my. Those things were, excuse me.
And for around maybe mid-August or the end of August, we will submit the budget amendment, the last and the final amendment for the fiscal year 2013. And then we will determine those items to see if we really need to spend.
Okay, because at least in the case of the Comprehensive City Plan and the Civic Plaza study, I can tell you that I really want those. We voted on them as far as I'm concerned. Those are policy. Is that correct, Mr. Walker?
Madam Mayor, the Council, I think there's a question of timing. With the finance representing getting up to the close of this fiscal year, which is the end of this week, we're not going to be spending that money. But we still will be intending to proceed with those projects that have been approved and directed by council.
Okay, so let me ask you again. So by not spending that money, then we do have a surplus of $75,000. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, but if we had spent it, we would not.
That's also correct, but we didn't spend it, so we haven't.
Okay, well,
the way that I have checked it, the expenditure, I include certain items that we know that we're going to spend. The reason that we have the revenue exceeded the expenditure for my projection, because we do have sales tax that came in stronger than what we anticipated.
Okay, thank you both very much.
Mr. Clifford?
Thank you, Dan. I want to stay on that real quick, because I want to try to understand and maybe help some of all of us here with the statement you just made, stronger sales revenue than anticipated. And I see here that the revenues are projected to exceed the amended budget, which would include sales and use tax licenses, permits, etc. Do you have a way from the state of Missouri to be in front of that, knowing that we are going to have more revenue come to us than what we had planned previously? This is a nice problem to have. And I see in print every now and then in the Post that the state says, looks like sales revenue is up 5%. But as that filters down, and especially to pool communities such as us, do we have a way of knowing ahead of time those kind of things? And then one more question.
We do not. The 1% sales tax pool came from St. Louis County. And the capital improvement of the stormwater park and fire sales tax came from the state. And none of these sources had provided us with any estimated or even alert that, you know, our sales tax is going to come better than what we projected.
I'm glad you're doing the job and not me. Thank you. Quick question. I see that some of our monies are coming from licenses and inspection fees. Is there any issues with our employment situation here with a strain on inspectors? Obviously, there's a nice pleasant increase in the revenues here. Is this affecting our labor pool in any way? Or our timing of doing these things, such as inspections, etc.?
Mr. Walker.
Madam Mayor and Councilmember Booker, and all of our city staff, use additional staff in some areas? The answer is probably yes. But we're doing what we can with what we have within the budget constraints that we've had over the past few years, and staff are performing very well.
Mr. Krause?
Right, I thank you. I don't really think I have any questions. Well, I did look at this report here, and this report goes back from 2000 all the way through sort of early projections on 2013 and then what the numbers might be for 2014. But I actually think it's a pretty encouraging report here. When I look at the eight budgets from 2000 through 2007, five of them had deficits, some of them were quite large. I think the sea change budget is really the 2011 budget. In 2011, that's the first year I was on council. Before I came on council, the then administration had asked for two sales taxes, which I believe correctly had failed. I think they were complaining that the city didn't have enough money. In the budget that we were first given and council passed in 2011, the original had $27.4 million in expenses with $25.2 million in revenue. And we actually amended the budget to actually increase the expenses to $27.6 million. So the budget that we actually voted on had a $2.4 million deficit in fiscal year 2011. So I remember us saying to the acting city manager at the time, could you cut $300,000 out of the budget, please? So we don't have to use so much of our reserve. And she said, well, gee, I don't know. I'll see what I can do. So when Mr. Walker was hired in later that summer, in the fall of fiscal year 2011, a lot of changes took place in the way the city was run, who worked for the city, what they did, what their job descriptions were, what their skill sets were, and how the departments were organized. So the expenses, although we had voted for $27.6 million in expenses, we only spent $23.7 million, a decrease of $3.7 million, not bad. And our revenue came back a little better too, from it went up to $1.8 million. So instead of having a projected deficit of $2.4 million in that fiscal year, we had a surplus of $3.3 million. I mean, you know, if Congress and the president and everybody could do something like that, that would really be something. So I think that's really commendable. Some of those savings were one-time savings. Many of those savings we've spent. In other words, we've hired more police, we've done more things with what would have been an ongoing surplus. And the idea, this is not like, we're not General Motors. The idea isn't to have the greatest profit we can make. This is not what cities are about, is having a huge surplus just to have it. So when I looked at the source of the surplus, and there's a lot of ways to look at the numbers. The surplus, let's see here, in 2007 to 2012, the surplus has gone from about $6 million to from 2010, make the numbers easy. From 2010 to 2012, so that's fiscal years 10, 11, and 12, the surplus went from $13.7 million to $23 million. That's a $9.3 million increase in the surplus. Well, that's pretty good. Some of that is a land transfer that's an accounting transfer. That's some land that we got from the TIF. But $6 million of it is real surplus. Honest to goodness, more money than we didn't spend. So, I mean, that's why we have a surplus that we can spend on capital projects. So, for me, looking at this information, the question was, I mean, are we being responsible in spending some of the surplus? I think the answer, of course, is yes. So, so even with our proposed capital spending, UCity will have a reserve between 30 and 40%. It depends a little bit on how you calculate it, is it? But if you use the most conservative way of calculating it, if you use unassigned funds and you get rid of that land transfer, we still have a surplus of 30%. Now, if you compare it using the same calculations for 2003, then the surplus was running a robust 7%, okay? So in this last decade, and mostly in the last part of the decade, we've really made great progress in building up the surplus during difficult economic times and now responsibly spending it. So I think this is really a very responsible budget that we built up a surplus, we changed the way we operate, we can maintain our city services, I believe, at this rate, and fix up the streets and all the other capital needs that need to be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pratt. Ms. Carr?
Yes, I had one more question. Of the surpluses that are listed, are your figures still correct when you said that $8 million in cash? I'm talking about for 8 million in cash, 5 million in investments, and 5 million in liabilities. And so rather than the 17 million or the 23 million or the 26, we're actually looking at 8 million in cash. And the others are receivables. Some of them are not liquid. Am I correct?
Receivable also considered as current asset,
okay.
Which is, it can be converted to cash right away.
Right away.
Yes.
Okay. So are we talking the $23-26 million? Or are we actually, once you take out the liabilities, what I'm concerned about is that we're kidding ourselves that we have, you know, a large surplus to spend, and some of it's assigned. And some of it is in non-liquid assets.
The financial statement has been the standardized. Therefore, the amount that we're looking at, for example, an assigned fund balance should be the amount that we would look into in order to determine our financial status.
Does that mean we could, if we wanted to, spend every bit of that?
Well, we normally do not do that.
I understand. It's a hypothetical.
As you know, we have our resolution that we try to maintain the unassigned fund balance at least 17% of our total expenditure for any given year. Therefore, there would be we never gonna spend,
I don't think that was the question.
Okay.
I think the question was, is that all, that $17 or $18 million, is that all spendable, immediately spendable, or is that some portions of that non-liquid, not spendable? I mean, you know, we can count that and say, certainly that's in my portfolio and that is my wealth, but I may not be able to, in an emergency, spend it. Again, I'm concerned that we're representing what we have, not that it's inaccurate, but we're fooling ourselves by saying, oh, we have this big amount. And in addition, as my esteemed colleague from the First Ward mentioned, we did have a TIF transfer, and we did have to this fund a transfer of monies when we refinanced those bonds. And so that kind of skews our vision of how much we actually do have to spend.
Well, as I said, all of the, in order to consider what is the status of our financial position, you have $17.8 million as unassigned fund balance. I think we should be proud of ourselves and consider that our financial status.
That wasn't my question, but thank you very much.
Mr. Kraft?
Right. I did review the financials of the city. These assets that are listed here are specific kinds of financial assets. I think, as I recall, the city has like $91 million in net assets in buildings and land and stuff like that. So these are a specific kind of assets here. These do not include all our buildings, our land, our trucks, and all that kind of stuff. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So the kind of receivables that we're talking about are things like, well, maybe you can explain, isn't it things like, doesn't the county owe us some tax money? It just hasn't showed up yet?
That is true, because this financial position is as of, for example, at each year would be June 30th. Therefore, July 1, the cash amount, investment amount, all the receivables, and even the fund balance itself will be changed.
So how much does our, I mean, I realize there are certain people in Washington that are kind of fixated on cash. How much does our cash balance can vary by millions of dollars over a year, isn't that correct?
That is correct.
Do you have any idea for how much it can vary?
Converted to cash?
No, just cash alone, if anybody care. I mean, if we haven't got our tax money in, maybe it could be low. If they get our tax money in, it could look like a lot all of a sudden.
For the general fund, I have seen our cash has been steady between 8 to 13 million.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay, we now move, thank you all. We now move on to council reports and business. I apologize, I failed to bring up my council and board commission grid. I promise to read that at the next meeting. Does any member of council have a report on a board or commission to which they may? Ms. Carr?
First, I would like to ask Pam if she would please pass out these to each council member, to Mr. Walker, and keep one for yourself, please. Okay. Earlier, you heard Mr. Womack talk a bit about what happened at the Human Relations Commission. And I am the liaison to the Human Relations Commission. I was a little bit puzzled. There was a very lengthy discussion about a meeting with the management at Schnucks, not just the management of the Olive Schnucks, but also eventually with contacting Scott Schnuck. And what you have before you is a letter that was written by David Olander, and I believe that is the one that that Jackie Womack brought up. And also, on the back side, you have the minutes of the June 13th meeting. I think what Mr. Womack was trying to tell you, and what I discovered, was that all of this took place without bringing it back to the commission. The commission acts by a majority of the quorum, not because one of the commissioners decides that he or she sees something, represents themselves as representing the commission. They must first have the permission or the votes of the commission to represent themselves as part of the commission. And that was the problem. I heard it. I didn't quite understand it. I did a little bit of research. It took me a while for that to connect in. And it doesn't matter to me whether I believe that Mr. Olander eventually sent an email to the staff liaison. And in the meantime, he had contacted the president of the commission. And they decided to hold this meeting, and at this meeting, eventually, Schnucks customer response specialist, another Schnucks person, three or four Schnucks, Ellen Byrne, who is the U City Chamber of Commerce, Elaine Williams, who's a human resources manager, Kathy McGinnis, who's the chair of the Human Relations Commission, and Dave Olander, who's the chair, and the rest of the commission didn't know anything about it. They didn't even vote. They didn't even hear the story to vote on it. I was told when I was a part of the Plan Commission that the president of the Plan Commission, or the chair of the Plan Commission, could only represent, be the only one to represent the position of the commission, but it had to be the position of the commission. So to me, it doesn't matter whether it is Mr. Olander or it is someone who is a good friend of mine. It's totally irrelevant. This was a behavior, a process that shouldn't have taken place, and it makes me quake because they went to Schnucks. We want Schnucks here. If we have a problem with Schnucks, and they, as you read that letter, it, you know, if they feel that Schnucks is, for some reason, discriminating against the community in which it's operating, that should have been brought to the commission first. And I'm also suggesting that not only should it have been brought to the commission, but maybe it should have been brought to the council, too. Do we want the commission going off and pinning Schnucks down to something without, you know, without somehow interacting with the rest of with the rest of the governing body? So, so I'm a little bit concerned that this I don't go into any place and tell them I'm representing the City Council of University City. I rarely even say I'm a council member unless it comes up somehow. So I'm not sure why, if you read this paper, Mr. Olander says, I gave her my card and told her I was a member of the U-City Human Relations Commission. Well, I guess that's okay, but he didn't represent the commission at that point. So I'm concerned. I think that what we need to do is give clear instruction to our boards and commissions that they must act as a result of a vote of a commission and not any individuals take matters into their own hands. If they do see something and they think it's an immediate concern, there's nothing to say that they can't ask to hold a special emergency meeting. But this evidently, these contacts were made in May. The email went to the city somehow, or went to the staff liaison on June 10th, I understand. And the commission didn't find out about it until the 16th of June, well after the first meeting. And what Mr. Womack told you is now they're having another meeting on sometime in July, maybe July 11th or something like that. And again, the commission doesn't know, nor do we. I mean, I'm not sure that I want commission members going to Schnucks without our knowledge. So that's my, I think they need some guidance. And unfortunately, because I don't think I was in a position to offer that guidance, I don't think I also was fully understanding the situation until I listened to the audio and until I looked at the minutes of the previous meeting to make sure that no one had previously discussed this. Policy is not made at a non-meeting. Two commissioners are not a quorum. Decisions cannot be made at a non-meeting.
Mr. Crowe?
Thank you. I think, Ms. Carson, since you brought that up, I think we at least ought to have some conversation about some type of improvement to the process. And I'm simply wondering, as I recall, this commission came back into existence after a prolonged hiatus. And I'm wondering whether or not it would be appropriate for the, it could be the city manager, it could be the city attorney, to walk back through the members of this commission and explain to them the roles, responsibilities, and maybe the limitations on their actions. I find it a little disturbing that any member of our city would go to a business, or any business, and represent basically the city in this effort, and I think that's a very strong and inappropriate level of conduct. And I would tend to think that this is something that would cause the city attorney to wince a little bit. And I would hope that maybe the city manager would work with the city attorney to determine some form of improved conduct by our commission members.
Mr. Sharp?
I would like to second what Mr. Crowe has stated. And it seems to be that we should make some effort. And we should also be the ones, if somebody is to contact Schnucks, it should come from the city manager or something, or the counselor or someone, but not for a person to go and represent the city. And I'm hoping that what Mr. Crowe has asked Mr. Walker to do, that we can find some way to make sure that that takes place, and whatever meeting is scheduled for the 16th, it should either be some kind of way we should intercede and intervene in this in some way, and I'm hoping that the city manager is able to do this along with our city attorney.
Mr. Crowe, Price, any?
Yeah, I would agree with my colleagues, and I mean, commissions, I've never seen this before, and you know, I'm kind of reading the letter and references being made, and forgive me if I'm not reading this correctly, but references being made to Rudy Giuliani and what they did in New York to prosecute crime. And I have friends in New York who are outraged by some of the tactics that have been taking place. So I don't know how a citizen can go and represent policy and law and make recommendations to an official of Snooks as it relates to crime. And that Snooks should follow what they did in New York City. And I don't think anybody up here would approve of that, because any of those type of actions would go through the chief of police, our police department, and then he would make recommendations to us as it relates to what should be done. So I just think that, you know, whatever action needs to be taken, and Mr. Shaw, Mr. Crowe, related to, needs to take place, because this could get extremely out of hand if people are just running off ad hoc doing things that they really have no authority to be doing. Because I had no idea, you know, this had even took place.
Mr. Crowe.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think that probably based on the situation at hand, I wonder whether we need to at least make, first off, I think to the city manager and through the city attorney, the way I said that may not have been clear enough, and I apologize, and we may need to work a little bit to move that forward. I would also hope that my colleague who seconded my amendment would agree to a friendly amendment that I believe that we need to instruct the members of this commission not to meet with, in particular, Snooks or any other business without having a meeting of the body and without consultation with city council. This strikes me as quite odd that we would have just a couple of members of a commission go meet one of our larger business owners in this capacity. So I would actually ask that my motion be amended to include that the members of the Human Relations Commission be instructed to cancel it. Their upcoming meeting with Snooks and be prohibited from any further individual meetings with businesses without prior approval of the council.
I would like to, may I jump in at this point in this discussion? I would like to suggest that I think it would behoove this council to invite Mr. Olander and Ms. McGinnis in to sit down with members of council to explain what happened, by whom, and what direction they thought they were working in. I am very uncomfortable with this council making a motion directing the actions of a volunteer board or commission without hearing from the members of that commission. Mr. Womack, I appreciate that you came and spoke and gave us your position. Ms. Carr, I appreciate that you gave us your position as chair of our staff liaison to that commission. However, I am very surprised that the suggestion has not been made to talk to the other members of the Human Relations Commission to have them explain to us what they did and why. I have no problems with, after hearing from them, directing them if we feel that's the need, but to go to make a direction like this to a board or commission that's been charged under their ordinance with certain jobs and duties and direction to council without even hearing from the people that are being discussed tonight, I think is very unprofessional, and I don't think we should do that.
If I may.
Mr. Womack, I'm sorry.
I may be out of order.
Point of order.
But
point of
they
order.
Understand what's going on.
Point of order.
Mr. Walker,
point of order.
I mean, Mr. Womack, I'm sorry. You do not have permission to speak
if
at this
If you want
time.
To defend them, if you bring them in here,
Mr. Womack,
not understand and they will not tell the truth.
Mr. Womack, could I tell you, thank you very much, sir. There is a motion on the floor and a second. I think Mr. Crowe has asked for an amendment to the first motion. Is there a second to Mr. Crowe's amended request? And Mr. Crowe, I'll have to ask you to restate that. I wasn't quite sure how you restated it.
I may have to look to the city clerk and to the city attorney with assistance on this, but I believe my motion was that through the city manager through to the city attorney would work with the Human Relations Commission to look through their, to examine their charter and their charge and determine the appropriate level of activity that that commission may have as a whole. And then there was an amendment that was to instruct the members of the Human Relations Commission to cancel their upcoming meeting with Snooks and to not have any further meetings with businesses in our community unless so directed by council.
Is there a second for the amendment to the initial motion? Ms. Carr seconds. Is there any discussion?
Well, it's your motion, so you get to speak first. That's fine. Sorry,
but I'm very friendly. I'll be happy to listen first.
Well, my only request was to divide it into two motions because the first motion is really pretty simple and straightforward. Everybody's going to agree. I think to tell them not to meet. I mean, what if they have a meeting and vote to meet before then? I mean, it's too confusing. I mean, the first motion is really straightforward. The amendment just overly confuses it. That's my only complaint. Whereas I think the first one would be unanimous, the second one, I'm not sure what we're voting on. So I'd like to vote on the one that we all agree on and then maybe refine the second one.
Yeah, I think that, I'm not sure that I'm opposed to that, Mr. Kraft. I think that in my mind, I think we need to, and I want to also reply to the mayor's comments. I think we have the official statement from the members that were present, and I think we have Mr. Olander's letter. So I think we have heard from the person who did this, and I'm happy to hear more. But I also believe that it needs to be, I believe we need to clearly state that if there is not even a commission, but members of a commission that are actually out there stating that they are working as a commission for the City of University City and contacting small or large businesses that they have concerns about, to me, that comes back to the charge from Ms. Forster, and that is, these are probably not within their charges. And I would like to prevent the upcoming meeting from occurring, because to me, enough damage has already been done.
I mean, the only issue is that if she tells us they can't do it, if she comes back with an answer that says, well, they don't have the power or the authority or to do it, then the second part becomes kind of irrelevant. That's the only point.
To a degree, however, if they decide to meet in the upcoming weeks, which I could easily see happening, then we have exacerbated the problem. So I would actually like to have a directive from the city council that would prohibit the members of, and by the way, hey, Mr. Kraft, I'll even limit it to the Schnooks for the time being, because that would take care of that session and then move forward. But I believe it is a, should be a concern to all of us when we just have one or two members of a commission purporting to act for the body.
Mr. Clifford.
First of all, it would have been nice to get this a little bit earlier than tonight. This is the first time that I've seen this, and we're to vote on something that I just saw. I feel very uncomfortable in doing that. I agree with the motion. I think it's a good one. I think it makes sense. I think it's innocuous enough that we get direction.
There's really nothing to take place other than that. The amendment one from Mr. Crowe, I don't think it's really necessary. consumers, whether they're on a commission or not a commission, they are going to go to a store, and if that store is not up to the standards of what they think is clean with inventory, then they have a right, no matter what their position is, whether it be the President of the United States or the Second Ward Council member. But I'd really like to weigh in on this and fully digest it before doing anything.
Ms. Carr, Mr. Price, and Mr. Kraft.
Actually, I didn't, to answer my colleague, Mr. Glickert's question, the reason it came to you today is because I had to listen to the audio to make sure that, in fact, this was not discussed with the commission on the 16th of April. I think it was important to know. Had they discussed it with the commission and received the majority vote to proceed, that would be entirely different. And then we might say to them, this is something that we would wish you would have consulted with the city manager. But in fact, that was not up on the website until today. And I did not make a copy for myself, so I couldn't go back and check it. And I introduced it under council liaising, it was entirely appropriate. If we wait too many more weeks, I think that it would continue to go on. Now, the last time that in the last meeting on the 20th of June, this was first brought up. There was a question whether it should go under new business or old business, but it had never been introduced to the commission prior to that. So I have several layers of concern, but my major concern is, yes, I can walk into any store and tell them that I don't think it's clean, and I can put the complaint in the complaint box, or I can call Scott Schmuck myself. The difference here is that that they were representing themselves as the commission, and in a sense representing their position as the University City position, and it's a bit of a problem.
Mr. Price, Mr. Kraft, and Mr. Glickert.
Yeah, I think Mr. Womack in his presentation was not saying that individuals or any citizen doesn't have the right to lodge a complaint to the store manager as it relates to the store itself. This is not what this is about. What he clarified was that action was taken that the body did not vote on, and that individuals went representing the body as like policy. Then it also, in the body of the letter, it says, well, we can meet you or at City Hall. So that gives credence to people who don't know at the store that the city got something to do with this. Because if you tell me to come to City Hall, I'm going to automatically assume that the city's involved. That's on a simplistic level. If I tell you to meet me at the City Hall, I tell you I'm a part of University City Human Rights Commission, meet me at City Hall, then that tells me the city has something to do with this. So the question becomes, I mean, I don't need to meet with anybody to explain to me why you didn't get a vote of the body to decide your action. I mean, that's the rationale you decided to do. So I don't need another meeting for somebody to come here and say, I did this. I don't know what they'll say. Because Mr. Womack will be here, and that might not be pretty with them trying to explain what they did. And he's not in agreement to what they did. And it's reasonable to say that before something gets out of hand, you need to slow it down and then rationally work your way through it. So I don't know, as an individual, that person can go back and be with Snooks 100 times, but I don't think they need to go back and be with Snooks representing the Human Relations Commission because they never voted on that action to be taken. They never voted to say, go see them. So for them to have another meeting, they got to go as individuals, not as representing the body.
Thank you, Mr. Price, Mr. Kraft, and Mr. Glickert.
Right. Really what I'm going to ask of my colleague is, I think that this is important enough. It would be nice if the council could be clear on this. And the advantage of dividing it into two separate motions would be, I expect one of them to be unanimous or nearly unanimous, and that way it's clear how the council feels about this. The second one is a little more detailed. I'm not sure how thrilled I am about directing them not to do something. But certainly the information part and the implication that this shouldn't happen again is something that I think is fairly unanimous. So that's why I would ask that it be divided into two separate votes, so that so council has a clearer voice on this rather than muddying it with some details.
Mr. Glickert, then Mr. Sharp.
I've had just a minute to look at this and try to listen to some very important points, but it seems to me that this is a letter with letterhead from Mr. Olander. And the first sentence has to do with him being asked by the Human Relations Commission to do something. So again, I don't have any other information than understanding that. It seems here he was directed by somebody on the commission. Maybe he wasn't, I don't know, but that's what it says here. And that if there's any, I think, thing to be, to move towards, it would be towards Mr. Olander. I don't think that the commission, the body, should be affected by one of the commission members who took this under his purview to communicate with this retailer in University City. So again, I think that the first motion is good, but I will abstain from the second one.
Mr. Sharp?
I'm in complete agreement with Mr. Crow in the fact that they should be told to whomever it is. And based upon what Ms. Carr has said, who is the liaison to the Human Relations Commission, and she has stated also that the commission itself has not agreed to any of this, that somebody should be told to cease and desist. That the idea of having a meeting or a second meeting and the commission has not met to direct these individuals to do whatever they're doing, I'm feeling that they should be told at some point that they should cease and desist until we get better information as to what it is that they're doing.
There is an amended motion on the floor, a motion to amend the previous motion. Is there a second? Ms. Carr seconds. Is there any further discussion? Mr. Price?
Is that the last motion you made?
Yes.
So I to the...
Mr. Price, can you turn on your microphone, please?
So I vote is affirmative, because I want no confusion on this tomorrow morning. And I vote is affirming Mr. Crow's amended motion.
No, the amendment only.
It is affirming that the motion will be amended, then we will vote on the motion.
We read the amendment.
Any further discussion?
You read the amendment.
Ms. Pong, would you please read the amendment? The amended motion.
Mr. Crow, may I want to interject if I missed some words here. Charge the amendment, instruct members to cancel upcoming meeting with Snooks and not to have any further meetings, any further upcoming meetings.
I believe, if I can assist you, I believe it was to cancel the upcoming scheduled meeting with Snoke's and to prohibit the commission or its members from having any additional meetings with any with other businesses in University City. Would it help everybody if I said until after the role has been clarified by the city manager and city attorney? Does that help you? I see lots of nods. I'm okay with that. I think I added a prepositional phrase onto the end of your motion, but I think that that gets us all to the dance. It prohibits them from having the meeting with Snooks. It cancels it, and it says no other business, no other meetings with any other businesses until after they have had the meeting with either the city manager or the city attorney to clarify their role. I see a nod on that side.
Point of clarification. Plenty of information. So is there another motion that this amended, or this is really amending the original motion?
I will take that either way. That'll get everybody, to as many people, to the dance as is possible. If you'd like that to be my second amendment, I'll even make it be a second amendment, and we'll roll them all through. Or we could just go down.
Is this an amendment to an original?
I was trying to clarify. Yeah, I was trying to clarify what Ms. Plum had written, and I think that the additional sentence probably helps. So that would be my amendment to my original motion. You okay with that, City Clerk? Is that, I mean, we're on the same page? Okay.
Any further questions? All those in favor of the motion as amended by Mr. Crow, please signify by saying aye.
No.
Amendment. No.
The amendment.
Amendment first.
You have to amend it first, then vote on the motion.
Oh, I said it wrong. All those in favor of the amendment to the original motion as presented by Mr. Crow, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Nay. And one abstention, please. Okay, now we have an amended motion on the floor. And that has been made and seconded. And any further discussion? I'm sorry, Mr. Clifford, I can't hear you. Ms. Pump, would you please read the motion as amended?
Okay. The same, this is as amended. To instruct members to cancel upcoming meeting with Schnooks and not have any further additional meetings with businesses in University City until after meeting with city attorney and city manager.
The first part of the amendment, though, Ms. Palm, referred to a meeting with the city attorney.
Okay, their city manager and city attorney to work with the commission to discuss their charter and charges.
Okay, is everyone clear on the motion? That the motion is to for the city manager to set up a meeting with members of the Human Relations Commission and the city attorney, Katie Forster, to discuss and clarify the mission and duties of the Commission on Human Relations, and to further instruct members of the Human Relations Commission to cancel any scheduled meeting with Schnooks and to prohibit them from any further meetings with Schnooks or any other businesses in University City until such time as that review has been completed. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Nay. The ayes have it. We now move on to other discussions and business. Mr. Price and Ms. Carr.
Ms. Palm, I have another set of papers to hand out. This is a map. Would you please give everyone a copy? And I will be referring to that shortly. Sometime in November, Mr. Blickert and Mr. Kraft brought forward a resolution to sweep the private streets. And at the time, as you can see by the cover page in the packet, it was recommended not to sweep the privately owned streets because our city attorney at the time said that there is a prohibition on using public funds for a private entity. And it was based on that that I did not consider the feasibility of doing that, not to mention that it would be miles and miles of streets. However, if you look at the costing that was done for that, it's fairly minimal. I believe it was between $15,000 and $40,000, and that included the snow blowing. So it really wasn't a large amount of money. And although I voted against it, I also tucked it in the back of my mind that there had to be a solution. And at the time, I said, well, if you pay a fee, then you circumvent that requirement of or the disallowment of using public funds for a private entity. And so I've been mulling this over, trying to figure out exactly what the best approach would be. At the same time, I have over 1,000 residences that live in private subdivisions on private streets who pay their taxes and do not get the services the rest of us get in paying their taxes. And I can't really justify when other private entities are given a go-ahead, we're going to pick up the tab as we did last year for the Settlement, I can't justify any longer not using public funds for a private entity, at least not tackling the problem. And so that is what I'm proposing to do here today. I would like these people to get their streets swept. Now, if you'll look at some of the other things I've included, we have a listing here of the various schedules, the street sweeping policies and procedures, and it tells you that for most residences, it's 3 times a year. For certain streets, heavily used streets and major arteries, it's once a month. And then for some streets, it's twice a week. And some streets, it's 4 times a week, and those are mostly our commercial district that we were talking about before, and in front of City Hall, I believe that's correct. But anyway, it's in here. So I took a look at those streets that are swept twice a week, and that's what this map is here for. This is a map. The pink areas are buildings owned by Washington University. Buildings that in which Washington University does not pay taxes. And you will see that many of those streets coincide with a large number of properties owned by Washington University, and they get their streets swept twice a week, and my subdivision constituents subsidize that. And that's not okay with me. So how do you do that? I've been told by Washington University that they will not consider a pilot. I don't think that we can twist their arm, but they will pay fees. So what I wanted to do tonight was to propose that we move street sweeping from somehow kind of tucked into our taxes to a fee-based process, and that's what I wanted to vote on, not to take the vote to make a decision tonight, but to instruct the city manager and his staff to take a look at this and bring us back some information, some numbers. So that means that some places that want to have their streets swept more frequently can pay a higher fee. Now, of course, they're not going to come sweep the street just in front of my house because they pay a higher fee. There'll be some reasonable approach to this. But I can no longer justify having my constituents subsidize the street sweeping on those streets where people pay no taxes, and that includes other not-for-profit organizations. So I'm opening this up to discussion for the rest of council, and then perhaps I should make the motion first. No, let's open it for discussion.
Mr. Cross and Mr. Kraft.
Yeah. And the last time I dealt with this, you know, I was like adamantly opposed. But there's probably a solution to everything. And the city manager, you don't have to answer this tonight. But my question would be, as we use this term public funds, the majority of our funding comes from sales tax. So I'm trying to decipher, does it become public funds when we put it in the bank or when a person spends it? I don't know the answer to that. So, you know, I'd like to get an opinion on when is that public. The other thing I would like is a couple of things, is what is the cost share if we broke it out of solid waste? What is my cost share, or what is people's cost share per resident without the private streets? You know, how much do I actually pay for the street sweep my neighbors tell me never take place? So what do I actually pay for that? So that's without private subdivisions. How much is it for one sweep, two sweeps, and three sweeps? And the second item is, what is that cost per sweep for everybody? Like private, us who don't live in private, and Washington. If everybody is paying a freight, what is the average cost per resident for a street to be swept? One time, two times, three times? Because I'm not for sure that I may be paying a lot more than what I should be paying. So if you spread the cost around, I'm not for sure if that cost might go down.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Mr. Kraft.
Thank you. I did bring this up last November. It was not met with particular enthusiasm at the time. I don't have my numbers with me. My recollection is that 17% of the streets in University City are not city streets. I see a nodding head because that's where I got the number from. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. When we did a statistical analysis, and those 17% of streets pay 30% of the property taxes in University City. So, there is a certain unfairness here. They're paying a lot of taxes and they're not getting a street swept. We're only talking $15,000. So I think rather than solve the problem tonight as to, you know, what's public funds, what's private funds, what's enterprise funds, what's in the Hancock Amendment, I think it's rather complicated. Really what I would just look for rather than take a vote is just I seem to sense a consensus on council that really what we would like is our city manager and our city attorney to, and maybe our finance manager to sit down, look at the problem, and see if they can come up with a solution. It will be noted that leaf pickup, which is sucked off the streets, is considered part of trash pickup, even if it's on a private street. But if litter is on a private street, that somehow doesn't meet the test. So I'm wondering if there's some way the funds could be changed. We could put it into the solid waste fund or some other way that could meet all the needs. So I would just look for a consensus for the city manager and staff to come up with something and kind of come back to us with something that seems to work for everybody.
Is there a consensus to ask the city manager and city attorney to handle all the questions and issues brought up tonight and then come back to council at a later date with a discussion?
Yes.
Okay. There is consensus. Mr. Price? Then Mr. Crowe?
To the city manager.
Mr. Walker?
You understood the variables that I was talking about. Is that correct?
Correct.
Mr. Crowe?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ms. Carr gave us this map, which I think I've learned over the
years to normally trust the veracity of Ms. Carr's research, but can we make sure that staff goes through this so that we've got all the, this may be from
staff producers.
So, and I'm still sort of shaking my head, and I know that we've probably got a lot of citizens out there too that were sweeping the streets twice as often in the neighborhood that pays the least amount of taxes. Wow. Thank you. By that I mean that the property taxes are off the roll through the number of 501c3 entities that own that property. So I think you've got your consensus, Mr. Kraft.
Thank you.
Mr. Kraft, who's going to say something else?
There's one former council member who asked about sweeping alleys. Could we look into that, please, too?
Okay, I believe there's consensus. We'll now move on to the next discussion, Ms. Carr and Mr. Crow.
Okay, quarterly reports. Again, let's see. Ms. Palm, I have another set of sheets, and actually, Mayor, I put these all together today. We have not been receiving quarterly reports, or at least that I'm aware of, and I've had several constituents ask me about the quarterly financial reports. And I have spoken with Mr. Walker at times, and he said something to the effect that you have to decide what you want. I'm not sure that I would want to determine the format. I would like to have a quarterly financial report. I think it's kind of the status quo. Someone sent an email to me yesterday and pointed out Clayton's website, and those are the next pages. The first one is actually the ordinance for a budget transfer authority. The next pages are off of the Clayton website, and if you look at it, right at the home it says, these are little, not buttons, but links, okay, find budget information, find financial reports. And, of course, find some other things. Right at the top, really easy. And so I clicked on Find Financial Reports, and darn, they just didn't list, like, the quarterly financial reports for the whole world to see. So I think that it's a practice that we should have. We should easily put it on our website. We want to emulate Clayton when it comes to bicycle routes, but I think this is cheaper and easier. And then the more important thing is when you all pass the budget transfer authority, if you look on the second page that I have highlighted for you, it says the city manager shall provide a written report to the city council itemizing all transfers made by him or her under this section. The report shall be due within 30 days following the close of the fiscal year quarter during which the transfer was made. And I would like to see that too. Would like to either make a motion or by consensus judge your agreeability, but it's something I believe is actually generated within the city. You may not want to read it. I certainly do, but I think it should be available as a matter of course to the public in an easy to find manner as it is on the Clayton website. It should so be on our website.
Mr. Walker, do you have anything you want to say?
No, Madam Mayor. We normally have difficulty providing the reports. We have been providing quarterly reports. The format has changed because I get pinged at from council members that sometimes the information was too much information, so we shortened the reports. But and that was Councilmember Carr stated that I had told her to have it any way you want, which is true. If you want the financial report is about 30 or 40 pages long that we generate internally. What we've done is summarize that. But if council wants the full report, we can do that. We'll take a look at the Clayton website and make it as publicly accessible as possible. I agree that information should be readily available. but you know, we respond to the feedback that we receive from council members, but we have been writing quarterly financial reports, albeit in different formats.
Any other discussion?
I think there's a consensus.
Is there a consensus among council for anything?
I think that Mr. Walker has just agreed to provide it. I apologize that I didn't recognize it as a quarterly report, but I didn't, and I was wondering where the, you know, where the budget transfers were, what we looked like as a result of our quarterly reports, and when asked by constituents, I was saying, well, I didn't get a quarterly report, I can't provide it to you, so I apologize, and hope that it, you know.
Mr. Crowe?
If Ms. Carr is thinking that she may not have received the quarterly reports from the city manager, said he's provided them, I'm assuming that between the city manager and the city finance director, they can provide us with the quarterly reports that they have provided to us over the past several years. That way you will have your files complete. We can delete them if we need to, but that way we can get the quarterly reports, because I believe city manager said they've been produced, and Ms. Carr is believing that maybe she may not have received them. So hopefully, as we move forward with this, since we've got a consensus that they should be produced, it shouldn't be too hard to give us the back copies of the reports that have been produced over the past couple of years.
And could I just say, I do believe we have been receiving them, and if you would like to receive the extended version, please let Mr. Walker know. Moving on, Ms. Carr and Mr. Price.
As you know, there was a flood on June 17th, and to start, let's see if I can find this. I was given these pictures by Mr. Lee Pegues, who lives on Glenside Lane, and I would like to pass these around to the council. These are pictures of the flood around his house. It was certainly devastating to Mrs. Patton. I walked into her house, and I was in flip-flops, and it was ankle deep at least by then. It is devastating every time it happens, and now I'm beginning to live in fear of every rain event, probably as my family can tell you, that every time it rains, I'm on the phone to one or two people, what does it look like over there? But I would like to now defer to my colleague, Mr. Price, and let him take the ball.
Yeah, who's over the page? K-4-1. And there's a sentence in there that I think is most impactful. If we look at the third paragraph, the third sentence, the city manager can correct me if I'm wrong. The Army Corps of Engineers is not a funding source. They don't have money they can give people.
That's correct.
Okay. Because if they did it, some of these projects would have been done. So they don't have the money. They just come out with ideas for projects they think should take place. So if we look at the third sentence, it says, what led to this delay is that funding was not secured at the federal level to finalize and approve the study in the federal fiscal year 2014. Now, I'm not for sure if funding has been secured today. So if funding never gets secured, these dates mean absolutely nothing. So what I'm proposing is, because we know the hard work that was expended for that first project on Wilson, which I give Congressman Clay Jr. all the credit for, because he spearheaded getting the funding for that project, that we strategically figure out how can we make a big squeaky wheel back again at Congressman Clay, our delegation, in order to get the funding for this project. Because, Mr. McGee, him and I talk, and we talk all the time, and he said that he didn't see me that day at a flood, and my comment to him is not that you see me, it's what I'm going to do. Because that's all that matters. You can see me the day of the action, but once the cameras go away and the adrenaline goes away, what happens after that? So to me today, it is what happens after the excitement is over. How do we get our folks, who are our federal delegation, to secure the funding for this project? And we're not talking a ton of money. We're not talking billions. It was estimated at 27 million. So I'm asking the body, anybody that wants to comment, what do we need to do to make this happen, to secure the money, so we can get these folks out of harm's way? Because this happened frequently, more frequently, and over and over again. And I want to thank Mr. Walcott. I told him that we need to put signs up at Hafner Court. So if somebody going in there and they get ready to rent an apartment, they need to know it floods back there. At least they know, and if they choose to go ahead and rent, it's not because they didn't see a flood sign to warn them that this is dangerous. So I'm open for any suggestion, but this is, to me, one of our number one priorities that got to come to the front burner. I know Hazel Irby is working on this with Congressman Clay. We have contacts working with Senator McCaskill's office. We need to reach out, whether they're Republican or Democrat, to get them to move collectively to make this 27 million happen. So I'm open to any comments on what we're not doing to make this thing work.
I would like to suggest that one of the things public officials can do because of their elected office, their letters are read and their calls are listened to, so I would encourage every member of our council to be contacting the various offices. I have contacted the office and am meeting with people from Congressman Clay's office, Senator McCaskill's office, and Senator Blunt's office. I'm also meeting with the head of MSD. I think we can do that individually, and I believe we as a city can. Staff is always talking to these organizations, these offices, I believe. I would just clarify, Mr. Price, that the $27 million was in 2007 dollars for the five-year flood plan. My hope is that if the federal budget ever eases up a bit so that they start putting money into the accounts for these kind of buyouts, that they will put enough money in for the 10-year floodplain. And back in 2008, they were estimating that would be about $40 million, and we would have to put up $10 million of that. So we're asking for about $30 to $40 million from the federal government, and I believe we should all be contacting our representatives at the federal level, and I think we should be making our thoughts known to MSD also. I have talked to MSD and hope to work with them to set up a community meeting where they can provide us with an update of what their plans are in our community. They have expanded their plans for improving the infrastructure of University City in the hopes of alleviating these flash floods, but realistically what they're proposing is a half a generation to a generation away when they finish the work. But I have been getting calls from constituents, and I do think it's time for another meeting with MSD so that they can update us on their plan now that they actually have some money in their budget that they can get some of this work done. But I would also encourage each and every member of this council to personally contact the offices of Congressman Clay, Senator Claire McCaskill, Senator Warden. And I think we should keep our eyes on what's happening in Washington, especially during the budget discussions. Ms. Carr.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to take this in a slightly different way. I also have contacted Hazel Irby, and the letter that I wrote has been sent to Congressman Clay's staff. And I'm also working on contacting the others. But the immediate needs of these folks is to deal with MSD. They must have, they must file complaints. Now that means that as soon as possible, because there is a deadline, as soon as possible they have got to have MSD over to make some kind of a determination and give them a case number. So there are a couple of things that I would like to suggest that we can do as a city. Number one, I think that if the city will grant us space, and I don't see any problem with it, we could run a Saturday workshop where several volunteers, including myself, will help people fill out the forms and get them started and explain the process to them one-on-one. It's very, first of all, they're under duress. It's very confusing to many of them, the process, and probably MSD will turn many of them down so that we need to be set up to go with an appeal process. Nova Felton did this in 2008. She has given me her very, very large shopping bag full of files. So I a promise to help walk me through this. If we could get some staff even to do it, I know that we put staff towards a bicycle plan. Could we get a staff member to help us? These are immediate needs. So I would like to see us look at something that we could do right away, as well as wrestle the federal government for the money. And then there's something else, and this has to do with MSD. Those channels need to be cleaned. They are just full of trees and silt. We need to require that MSD takes care of their river, and when their rivers and their branches flood onto my constituents' lands and they say, oops, I'm sorry, the sewers didn't overcharge, it was overland flooding, so we're not going to cover for it, I think they're responsible. They must maintain their channels, and they're not doing it. So that's the kind of immediate direction and pressure that I would like to put in. In the meantime, I'll be glad to write letters, make phone calls, twist somebody's arms. I'll take a boondoggle trip to Washington, D.C. and knock on doors if that's what's required. But I think this needs to be done right away.
Mr. Price?
Yes. If memory serves me correctly, Ms. Carr brings up a good point, because I think either people filed too late with MSD and they wouldn't look at their claims, or people filed but didn't know there was an appeal process. So we had either a lot of people who missed or who found out after the fact they could appeal. And I do remember Nova really being active in making sure that took place. And then secondly, with MSD, let me just, and the city manager, people may differ with me. MSD will claim that the channel belongs to the residents. I done heard that before, sitting right in this room. And I urge people, do not get in that channel and be cleaning that channel out, because then you're taking ownership of that channel. That's MSD's responsibility. That is not yours. So we should be climbing down in there, cleaning out. They'll say, well, you clean the channel out, then you must own it. So to me, it is a big issue that we got to deal with on ownership of that channel with MSD, and to get them to do what we've been assessed for in those quarterly payments that have been going up and up and up. You know, to do what they need to do. But to the people here that, you know, I would give every ounce of fiber that I have to make sure we do something with this. Everything, this top priority for me. So we all fight this thing to the end, stay vigilant, and make something happen.
Mr. Sharp?
Mr. Walker, I remember one time several of the council members, if not all of us, went down and had a meeting with MSD for the purpose of getting whatever information we could to determine what they will do and how they will respond to us. Is there a possibility of setting something like that up again?
Madam Mayor, through Council Member Sharp, if that's the desire of council, we can see if we can arrange a meeting with council members to meet with MSD.
If there is a possibility of, say for instance, individuals say, well, somebody didn't file in time or whatever and so forth, if we could get a clear understanding as to what the procedures are and how we can go about making sure that we do this, I would certainly like to for us to meet again with them so that we will have all of our avenues covered as to what kinds of things we are to do, what kind of things we cannot do. I don't know if we want to go through the concept of who owns the channels again, but if that needs to be done, possibly we need to just meet with them and find out all of the do's, don'ts, and all the information we can so that we can be supportive of our people.
Based on the comments tonight, Mr. Sharp, I do believe you'd want to clarify ownership, because I know MSD owns some channels, others are split ownership, and some are residential, so that might be one point to clarify. Mr. Walker?
Just thinking about it, perhaps what might be a value, and I'll throw this out to address Council Member Sharp's question. It seems to me back in 08 when we had this problem, we asked MSD to attend a council meeting so that there was a, you know, the public could hear as well what their responses were to the various questions that were raised. Would that be satisfactory? We could contact MSD and ask them to attend a meeting so the council members may have questions for them directly, as opposed to a private meeting.
Mr. Sharp, does that sound okay?
Yes and no, but I'll accept that.
Ms. Carmen?
I would like to ask Mr. Walker if the city can be of some help in the filing of the claims, at least in helping us get started, because I think it will require a little more expertise than I have, although I'm willing to learn on the job, and I think we've already been through this before.
Madam Mayor, Councilman Ricard, we'll make the staff members available to assist.
Thank you very much.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, we now move on to unfinished business, Bill number 9183. Ms. Pum, may we have the second reading, please?
An ordinance approving a final plan of a minor subdivision of a tract of land to be known as Olive Boulevard 7531 to 7547 consolidation plant, part of lot 16 and lot 17 of Mount Olive subdivision,
May we have a third reading, please?
An ordinance approving a final plat for a minor subdivision of a tract of land to be known as Olive Boulevard 75312-7547, consolidation plat, part of Lot 16 and Lot 17 of Mount Alma subdivision.
What's the pleasure of the council? Mr. Sharp moves. Is there a second? Ms. Carr seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, Ms. Plum, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Price?
Aye.
Ms. Carr?
Aye.
Mr. Craft?
Aye.
Mr. Crowe? Mr. Glicker? Mr. Sharp? Mayor Wolf?
Aye. Thank you very much. We now move on to a new business. We have one resolution tonight, Resolution 2013-7, a resolution to award the city manager a 2% cost of living adjustment, also known as COLA, requested by Mr. Sharp and Mr. Glicker. Is there a motion to approve? Mr. Sharp, is there a second? Mr. Glicker, is there any discussion? Mr. Crow.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have a question to folks who are making the motion award to whomever can answer. And I thought we had a conversation about the fact that the city manager was not part of the COLA increase during the budget conversations. And so all of the council voted on the budget that didn't include that increase. And now 2 weeks later, after we've passed the budget, we're now coming back to do a cost of living increase for the city manager. So I'm just perplexed as to why this cost of living increase wasn't in the budget. This actual issue came up during the study session, and the question was asked, does the cost of living adjustment include the city manager? And the answer to the question was no. And then we all passed the budget 2 weeks ago, and now in our very first meeting afterwards, we're being asked to give a cost of living adjustment. I'm just trying to figure out how this came about.
Ms. Carr?
I also have the same question. I think it should have been included in the budget if it was intended to do this. Just to make clear, the cost of living increase is not reflective of merit. It's just things cost more, so we're going to give you a little bit extra. But it in no way reflects on the evaluation or the merit. So it seems to me that it should have been considered in the budget, and there would have been no reason why. We were adding things up to the 11th hour. So I kind of, I guess of the, perhaps, let's see, this was Mr. Glickert and Mr. Sharp. Maybe somebody could explain to me why we didn't include this in the budget.
Thank you, Mr. Clifford. Mr. Sharp, do you have any comment?
Not really. I just feel that the city manager should have a cost of living increase.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Mr. Crow?
No, I respect my colleagues and their position, and I'm not sure that anyone necessarily doesn't want our folks to get cost of living increases, as we all voted for a cost of living increase for our employees. But to our citizens and to the folks who pay the bills around here, I would have to think that sometimes when it looks like a duck, it walks like a duck, it talks like a duck, it must be a duck, that we just voted on this budget 2 weeks ago, knowingly not having a salary increase for our city manager. And the first change we're making, would you like to, I'm happy for the finance manager to come up if there's a question for her. This is the first change we're making to the budget.
Madam Mayor, this is no change to the budget. The 2% cost of living was factored into all of the budget information that was provided to council. So perhaps Councilmember Crow has a different recollection, but I recall no discussion at all of the city manager's cost of living.
I do believe there was a question that was asked. I believe it was asked by me,
and it was the city manager included in it. And by the way, if the city manager was included in it on last week's numbers, I'm happy and I still would have voted for him. But if he wasn't, then we all knew that he wasn't. And I'm just trying to come about why we're doing this.
The city manager's cost of living increase was included in those numbers, is the answer. The city manager's cost of living increase was included in those numbers. If council chooses not to approve the resolution before it, then the budget would be reduced by that 2%. But for budget purposes, that money was included for all city employees.
Mr. Kraft?
It's my understanding that, there was someone, it was unclear as to how the city manager's contract was written, as to whether he automatically got the same COLA that all employees got. And it's only after, actually today, hearing the city attorney tell us that that's not the way the contract is written, that it was I was absolutely certain that he was not included in the increase that we voted for all the employees. But I think if we give it to all our employees, he is one of our employees.
Mr. Crow.
I'm going to try it one more time. So the numbers were put in, but then we wrote a resolution that didn't include the city manager. The numbers were in, but the resolution that we voted on and the job classifications we included didn't include the city manager. I'm seeing a shaking of heads from the head of public works and the head of finance. Thank you. Okay.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, Mr. Price.
So the vote means that every employee will get 2%.
That is the end result of this vote, yes. Mr. Kraft.
I was just going to ask for a roll call vote.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion?
Ms. Carr. Just so I can make sure. So we have already put the money in, and the policy, we have now established a policy that we intended to pay for every employee. Is that what I'm understanding?
No, Councilman Kerr, you didn't establish any policy. When we prepared the budget, we put in a 2% increase salary cost of living for all staff members. That's not a policy decision, that's a financial budget decision.
Any further discussion? Ms. Carr? You're like that.
I guess the final question is, this is not an increase then to the budget. Is that that's the question I'm asking?
Correct.
Thank you.
If there's no further discussion, Ms. Pump, would you please call the roll?
Ms. Carr?
Aye.
Mr. Craig?
Aye.
Mr. Crew?
Aye.
Mr. Glickard?
Aye.
Mr. Sharp?
Aye.
Mayor, Mr. Price?
Mayor sounded good.
Aye.
Aye.
I remember you. Mayor Welsh?
Aye. Thank you very much. Resolution 2013-8 has been pulled. We have no more requests to speak. We now move on to the council comments portion of our agenda. Does any member of council have any comments he or she wishes to make? Ms. Carr?
I actually have one more. Ms. Kahn, you have earned your diet points. Again, I like to solve problems. Sometimes it seems as though I'm contrary, but something keeps rattling around in my head. And one of the things that rattles around in my head these past 2 weeks has been the Suttermeyer house. And I just so happened in my reading to pick up
a copy of the comprehensive annual financial report. Everybody's favorite reading, right? And so the first page here is from that CAPR, and listed among our culture and recreation is number of parks, park acreage, tennis courts, etc. And at the very bottom we have listed Suttermeyer Historical Building. What we don't have listed here is the Green Center. Now both of those are rented, so unless we've made a transfer to the Green Center, and I don't believe we have, the next page shows something from the Green Center's website, and it says that we signed our first lease with University City in October of 1998. We have a lease for 25 years with an option to renew for another 25. And in fact, for the lease for the Suttermeyer house and property, they said that it was modeled after the Green Center. And I got to thinking about the Hanley House in Clayton. Since I was on the website, I made a quick trip over to the Hanley House and then called Patty DeForest. She had been a coach for my son when he was swimming, and she now heads up the recreation department. The Hanley House is part of parks. It's one of their parks. And it struck me that the obvious thing was to make the Suttermeyer House one of our parks, too. That way, we could legitimately chip in for whatever needed to be done. The society still exists. That doesn't affect the society at all. I'm not arguing the point now. I'm just planting a seed. The Parks and Recreation Department in Clayton handles the Hanley House. They still have their historical society that gives their special programs. Nothing really changes, but it allows for the kind of attention that's needed. Apparently, the Suttermeyer Society doesn't have the ability to raise the kind of funds that are needed. There was a strong desire expressed by this council to take care of the Suttermeyer House, which is, like the Hanley House, the oldest building in our community. And so I'd like to plant that seed and think that we might consider making that one of our parks.
If we get to that point, I would just like to consider that we go all the way. And in Clayton, I believe the city of Clayton manages the Hanley House, pays for everything in the Hanley House. It's fully a city-owned and operated property. And having been involved with Suttermeyer at the beginning, I would love it if the Suttermeyer Society was supported fully by the city. I've already talked about what I did during the flood involving the flood this week. I did have two ribbon cuttings, and I encourage everyone in New City to check out the new Fortell's Pizza on Hanley, Forsyth, and the new Cookies and Popcorn Factory on Delmar. I spoke at the YWCA in downtown St. Louis to young women talking about getting involved in civic life. I attended a memorial service for longtime community activist and volunteer Mr. Richard Dockett, and I attended a community festival at the Bible Way Baptist Church. They had a beautiful day after a very wet couple of days. And if there are no more comments, I would like to adjourn this meeting of the City Council of University City at 9:02. Thank you all for coming.